Hello, and welcome to the Off-Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances, and I'll be your hostess. Hello, hello, this is episode 6, and I am actually kind of under the weather. But I had something on my mind, and I thought I'd go ahead and share it with you, and then maybe later in the week when I'm feeling better, I'll come back and update you on my projects and comment on my commenters and do all that good stuff that I like to do. But right now, I don't think I'm really up to it. It's just I've just got a little summer bug, and I'm telling myself, you know what? It's better than having a summer cold because it's really hot where I am. I don't know about you, but today here in sunny North Carolina, middle part of the state, it's about 94-95 degrees, and that's just nuts. That's really too hot for early mid-June, but we are suffering through with great dignity and pride, as we do here in the center of North Carolina. Anyway, I'm going to try to speak up and be of good cheer because, again, I don't have a cold. I'm breathing just fine. I am going to talk about something here that I wrote. I was thinking about it, and I thought I want to write this, and maybe that I'll do this for my podcast. And I'll just read it to you. But first, if you would like to contact me, there are a couple ways of doing it. You can leave me a comment at http://offkilterquilt.podbean.com. You can email me at fdowell@mindspring.com. You may feel very free to leave a comment over to iTunes. They make me happy. Or just leave a rating, but only if you like this podcast. If you don't, then why are you listening? Also, do consider joining the Quilt Cast Supergroup over at Big Tent. We seem to have had a number of people join up this week, which is really cool. It's a neat conversation. It's a lot of fun. So it's a way to talk about quilting with not just the podcasters, but the other members of the group. But if you have questions or complaints about the podcast, there's a place to air your grievances. Anyway, all you have to do is go over to bigtent.com and sign up, and you can sign up for all sorts of subgroups and this and that. It's all very exciting. So, let me read you what I wrote. This is about quilts as documents. I was inspired to write this after listening to a new podcast on the Quilting Podcast Block. It is called The Quilter's Notebook. I know a lot of you listening to this probably have already listened to it. I hope so, but if you haven't, go listen to it. It is such a charming and neat podcast. I believe the podcaster is Amy. I feel very strongly that that is the case. If it's not, oh, please forgive me. I'm sick. But anyway, what she's going to do, this is so cool. She's got a quilter's notebook that she keeps, and she's going to take us through the process of keeping our own quilter's notebook. And as someone who likes to get organized at least once or twice a year, I'm looking forward to it. It was a really wonderful first episode, Amy. If you're listening to this, you should know that. You did a great job. And it was very funny because at the very end, she said, okay, guys, you made it sound like this was going to be easy. And she said she had to do it over about 100 times. I sometimes have to do my podcast a couple times because I get rambly, and it's just easier to do it over than to edit. So, but Amy, I thought you sounded great, and I'm sure everyone else did too. Anyway, listening to Amy talk about her household notebook in her first episode of The Quilter's Notebook, I thought it was not only a great idea for an organizational tool, but also as a documentary project. I'm going to stop and interject. Amy keeps a quilter's notebook, but she also has a household notebook, and she talked about that some, and that was really neat. It has many sections, and it's basically a way of organizing her home life. Years from now, one of Amy's grandchildren or great-grandchildren will stumble across Amy's household notebook in an attic somewhere and be enthralled by it. So this is what life used to be like in 2010. Wouldn't you love to find your grandmother's day book? Way back in 2008, I started the year by keeping a moleskin notebook in which I wrote down what we ate for dinner and any family happenings of the day. I kept it up for about a month, but I still think it's a great idea. Maybe I'll try it again someday. Someone in the future might find it interesting. I don't trust that the internet will hold up forever. Last night I was reading an article in the Atlantic Monthly about a computer worm a lot of folks are worried about, and I sort of assume that one of these days a worm or a virus will take the whole thing down, or else we'll just run out of energy. All our wonderful document storage devices, websites and blogs, Flickr, Ravelry, will come tumbling down. What will be left is bits and pieces of paper. Amy's household and quilting notebooks, the three letters that have been written since 1998. Historians will be praising the names of those of us who still record our lives in tangible ways. That got me to thinking about quilts as documents. They are documents, I think, although like the fabled Underground Railroad quilts, they speak in a code not everyone can read. I know that when I look at the quilt I made using some of the blocks from Barbara Brackman's Facts and Fabrications, I immediately remember February 2010, the month I made it. I remember the quiet of midwinter before the advent of a spring I spent traveling hither and yon. I remember going to Joann's to buy some inexpensive fabric I'd feel comfortable messing around with and being so happy to find a fat quarter collection with just the right colors. A historian who happens upon this quilt 50 years from now, should the Joann's fabrics last that long and the people at my local quilt shop say no, they won't, will see other things. He or she will look at a quilt made in 2010 that uses traditional blocks sewn together on a machine by an unskilled seamstress. The historian will wonder about the quilt's maker. Why did a 21st century quilter decide to use patterns that originated in the 1800s? Perhaps the historian will look at the quilt along with other quilts I've made and will have made in the future and learn something about me, about early 21st century quilt making, and about the leisure pursuits of the middle class. I gave the first quilt I made to my sister-in-law, Jessica. When I visited my quilt this spring, I was reminded of the hours I spent with the pieces spread out everywhere. I thought about laying it all on the floor to pin baste it and trying not to ruin the hardwood floors. I remember how fun it was to make and how thrilled I was to finally make something resembling a quilt, lacking only right angles. For Jessica, this quilt means something else, and its meaning evolves for her. It has traveled around her house. It's a blanket both of her children have napped on. Who knows what it will become later, how its meaning will shift for her. Like photographs of the past, quilts have private and public meanings. If the quilt you're working on right now lasts 100 years, a complete stranger could come upon it in 2110 and fall in love with it, even though its colors may have faded by then. They'll be curious about who made it, the way we're curious about the quilts we see in museums and history books. Although I don't believe the internet will last forever, and as an aside, I'm always wrong about these things, I also thought CDs were like the 8-track tapes of the 70s, and although they are now sort of going out of style, gosh, I was made that prediction in 1986 that they wouldn't last long. And here it is, 2010, and folks are still using them. So the internet may last into eternity. But I'm just saying, I don't believe, personally, that it will last forever. Although I don't believe the internet will last forever, I am happy that the Alliance for American Quilts is doing its important documentary work with the Quilt Index and Quilters SOS, Save Our Stories, in which oral histories are collected from quilters talking about their quilts. These are not just stories about quilt making and quilt makers, they're stories about women's lives. When I was a kid in the 1970s, during the second wave of feminism, smart aleck boys used to ask me if women were equal to men. Well, where were all the great women artists? Boys, they're right here. Our quilts are documents, and they should be documented. I'm looking forward to listening to Amy's upcoming episodes about how to make a quilter's notebook, and I hope they'll inspire me to document my quilts. But whether or not I ever do, and I can hear the quilt historians of 2110 yelling, please, please, document your quilts, they will continue, my quilts will continue to send signals to the world about this time, and this place, and this quilt maker. So that's what I wrote, and I also wrote notes, again, because my brain is just fuzzy. As I was reading that, I'm like, you're reading very slowly, but I can't help it. I've got a fuzz brain. The other thing I was thinking about, just obviously connected to this in some ways, is quilt history books. Do you read them? I've mentioned Barbara Brackman's Facts and Fabrications about Quilt of Slavery Times and Beyond, which is a very interesting book, even if you're not interested in the patterns. She's a good historian. I think it would be interesting to be Barbara Brackman, don't you? Except, and here's the thing, I am not wildly interested in fabric history. As I've mentioned, I did a lot of traveling this summer, and I don't like to travel unless I'm traveling, say, to Paris with my family. That kind of travel is fabulous. But I was traveling for work. I was going around promoting a new book and visiting schools. And, you know, the visits in and of themselves are very fun, but the staying alone in hotels and riding on planes, which I don't particularly like to do, is not so fun. And so I was looking for ways to bribe myself to be of good cheer all through the trip and not be a baby about it. So I got a book called The American Quilt, A History of Cloth and Comfort, 1750 to 1950, which is by Roderick Karakoff and Mary Elizabeth Johnson. And it's a wonderful book, and for the pictures alone are really fabulous. But it did turn out, A, to be a book that I personally could not read while traveling. Really, when I'm traveling, I should just invest in like 10 or 12 really trashy novels, because my brain gets fried so quickly that nonfiction was a bad choice. I also got The Age of Homespun, Objects and Stories in the Creation of an American Myth by Laurel Thatcher Ulrich, and I didn't even bother cracking the cover. I'm going to take it with me when we go to the beach, where my brain is very calm and I can absorb information, but I couldn't do it on the plane. But in any event, the American Quilt, A History of Cloth and Comfort, is a little bit expensive. I think it's $30 or something. So it was this treat, and I really looked forward to reading it. I couldn't really read it. It probably did not help that it started out with a history of fabric. And you know, I feel like as someone who really likes fabric, I'm really just crazy about fabric. I can't get enough of it. I have very little interest in its history. I really don't. And the book, and I think to its credit, I think that's a good information for people who like that sort of information. And it makes sense to really talk about how fabric kind of came into our lives. It wasn't always a part of our lives. But I do kind of feel like, why aren't I more interested in this? And I wasn't. And I think a big part of it is what interests me the most is people's story. People interest me. It's hard because I'm an introvert, so I don't actually like being around people all that much. But I do really like people a great deal. I particularly like reading about people, which is so different than having to make small talk with people. Even people I like, sometimes I'm like, okay, we've been talking for 2 hours and I just need to take a nap. So where was I? But I do. I'm so interested in people's stories. And I have found that the quilt history that interests me the most is history that is connected with actual people. Have you been to the International Quilt Study Center's website? It's a neat website. It's got a lot of stuff going on. And they have video casts that you can access through iTunes. You can actually access it through their site, and it takes you to iTunes. And they're very academic. And the ones that were about people, I really was interested in. The ones that were about the history of chintz, you know, not my thing. And it's not a criticism of the lecturer talking about chintz. She seemed like a good lecturer, and it seemed like the audience was responding in a very positive way. And I was just thinking, wow, that's a lot of chintz. But one of the video casts that I enjoyed quite a bit is called Meet the Makers. And it just talked, I think, about 9 different women quilters. I mean, from the past, like the 19th century, maybe early 20th century. And that I found fascinating. And it was very short. It was only 10 minutes. I was bummed. I could have watched that for ages and ages. I think that when it comes to quilt history, once you separate the quilt from its maker, my interest is only held for so long. I want to know the story behind every quilt I see. I think one of the reasons that the Civil War quilts are so interesting, and certainly, again, Barbara Brackman is a very good historian, and I'm enjoying her book about the Civil War quilts that I'm reading right now. One of the reasons they're interesting is because Barbara Brackman's doing a good job of making them interesting, but also, you know, there's a lot of letters, there's a lot of diaries to draw from. With the Civil War quilts, you can learn about the makers, and you really have a sense of the people's lives, the quilt makers' lives, which sometimes there's other quilting history where you just don't get that connection. Here's a quilt, here's the fabric that's used, here's the patterns that were popular at this time, and all that's well and good, but it doesn't really connect us to the people who made them. And that's what the connection I want, is to know more about the women who make the quilts or who made the quilts. I suspect in the end it's going to be the novelist who deliver us the stories that we really want to hear, even if they're made up stories. And I want to mention a novelist who, if you're not familiar with, I would recommend. Her name is Sandra Dallas. She's actually written a nonfiction book about quilts, about a quilt. It's like the quilt that made it to Golden. She's from Colorado, or at least she lives in Colorado, and a lot of her books are about Colorado, which, to be honest, and if you're sitting here in Colorado listening to this, you must forgive me. For a long time, I was like, I don't know why. I think because I was a child and an early teen in the 70s. And you know what Colorado meant? Really rich people skiing and shooting each other and snorting cocaine. That was like my notion of Colorado. And I'd like to be really rich, but I don't ski and I don't snort cocaine and I haven't shot anybody yet. So I didn't feel, you know, your imagination just is compelled in certain directions. And my imagination was never compelled toward the state of Colorado until I read these novels by Sandra Dallas. And I don't know if she's a quilter. I feel like she must be, because so many of her characters are. And she clearly has a strong interest in quilting. She has got a number of novels. The three that I have read and really enjoyed are The Persian Pickle Club, Prayers for Sale, and The Diary of Mattie Spencer, which I particularly loved. There are stories about women, there are stories about quilters and quilts, and she's a very good writer. There's some other quilt novels that I've read that I've enjoyed because they're about quilting, but Sandra Dallas is really just a really good writer, on top of being someone who clearly has an interest in quilt making. So I would recommend that, because the fact is, historians do what they can with what they've got to work with. But if we want deep down quilting stories, I think we just are going to have to rely on novelists to give them to us. And Sandra Dallas, as I said, I think is just a really good novelist, and I would recommend her books to you. Well, as I said at the beginning, I do have quilting news and updates for you. I've actually finished stuff, and I just feel right now a little too cruddy to give you all the dirt. I want to jump up and down and be enthusiastic and make you feel excited about what I have accomplished. And I'm not up to that task. So I do believe I will be back later in the week to talk a little bit more. But until then, I think I need to take a nap. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing and stopping by my site and just doing all the great quilty things that you do. Stay in touch, and I'll talk to you soon.